supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Pennsylvania's Department of Education made it official today. Philadelphia's school district will be controlled by a local school board at the end of the next school year. The green light from the state's top education official follows the state-run School Reform Commission's vote last month to dissolve itself after 16 years. More from WHYY's Bobby Allen.
In 2001, in the midst of real money problems, the state stepped in and took control of Philly schools. That meant funding depended on which governor was in office. In 2011, Republican Governor Tom Corbett made huge cuts that caused widespread teacher layoffs. The district is still reeling from those. Sick of being beholden to the state, activists and local leaders have long pushed for a return to local control.
It's time for the SRC to dissolve. We can return to a locally appointed school board that we think is going to be more responsive to local needs.
That's Jim Engler. He's a top policy and legislation official in Mayor Jim Kenney's office. He said Kenny will appoint 9 members to the new school board, and they'll start working in July. City Councilwoman Helen Gim says while the SRC called the shots for Philly schools, racial and class segregation worsened. She blames the massive charter school expansion that the SRC approved. Others say charter growth attracted more people from the suburbs, and that helped the city's tax base. Either way, Gim says most people agree that these kinds of debates should be happening locally.
When the state takeover actually happened, there was just, you know, a tremendous outpouring in the streets. It was incredibly divisive. And the reclaiming of local control doesn't feel that way.
SRC member Bill Green also wanted an eventual return to local control, though he voted against it, saying the transition is being rushed. The district still needs to get its financial house in order, and without major assistance from the state, Green says the city will be forced to raise property taxes, and that's just to maintain the status quo. Plus, Green says Governor Tom Wolf, who is running for re-election, can now use the SRC's demise as a political win.
He could, I guess, campaign this year saying the SRC was eliminated, which was one of his campaign promises, which is unfortunate to bring politics into what would have been a very smooth and responsible transition.
Cynicism aside, Philly schools being locally controlled is all but a done deal now. And that's big news for the 130,000 students in district schools and the additional 65,000 who attend charters in the city. Bobby Allen, WHYY News.
During this season of giving and receiving, let's focus on Chester County women and girls benefiting from high school students who in turn profit from firsthand experience pertaining to the power of advocacy and the importance of philanthropy to make a real difference in the lives of those in need. Joining me is Michelle Legaspi-Sanchez, Executive Director of the Chester County Fund for Women and Girls. Michelle, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.
What is the work of this specific fund?
Our organization has been around for 20 years, and our whole mission is to ensure that women and girls have the resources and opportunities to thrive. In the last 20 years, we have granted out $3 million to about 71 organizations serving women and girls in Chester County. We've also been involved in education and advocacy initiatives. But one way that we have been doing our grant making is through our Girls Advisory Board.
And with that, let's bring in two of the advisory board members. These are high school students, Emery Chiappa and Bess Nyblom. Emery, Bess, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thanks for having us.
Now, I understand that, Emery, you have tenure over Bess. This is your second year of involvement.
Yes, it's my second year.
So what is the work of the advisory board? How did you come to it?
Well, I discovered it through my grandma, who has a friend on the board, and she told my grandmother about the work that GAB does. So I applied, and it was really interesting to me how we're able to learn about all the difficulties that women and girls in our community face, and we're allowed to discuss this, and then we're able to go to these nonprofits and give out grants to the nonprofits.
And so, Bess, what are some of the philanthropies that this entity is involved with?
So this year, we decided to fund 5 different organizations. They're called Mom's House, Legal Aid of Southeastern Pennsylvania, La Comunidad Hispana, the Domestic Violence Center of Chester County, and Community Volunteers in Medicine.
And do they apply for these grants, or you just study these different funders and decide who is worthy of bestowing the monies on?
Our first meeting as a group, the Girls Advisory Board, we decided on and narrowed down around funding priorities, which ended up being access to sexual and reproductive health care and education, support for low-income and single mothers to increase financial security, and support for women affected by violence. And then we sent out these priorities to the community and invited organizations to apply. And we read through those applications and visited the sites and decided on which organizations to fund.
One of the key components of our board is about unity. So a lot of the girls will have their opinion, and we all come together in the end.
Michelle, who have been some of the major recipients of this work, and how do you measure success year to year?
Mm-hmm. Well, what's remarkable about the Girls Advisory Board is that what they decide to fund, the priority areas, are driven by the girls. The priority areas that Bess has mentioned was this year's, but in years past, it's been different. So we've seen human trafficking as something that's important to the girls, or educational opportunities for young girls. So in terms of consistency among grantees, it can really vary, which I think is a good thing because it really reflects what the girls are seeing in their communities.
What is the major need in 2018? Is it education? Is it health? Is it welfare?
I think education for young girls, that's something that I've always been passionate about, is making sure that young girls get quality education from preschool to high school and then on to college. So for me, that's probably one of my biggest priorities.
For Chester County, which is a very wealthy county, there's a lot of poverty. And so the fact that one of our funding priorities is to help single mothers and low-income families increase financial security, that's very important to me.
Are there any specific ways that come to mind of how that end can be achieved?
Like, for instance, Mom's House. They provide free childcare for single parents or low-income parents who are looking to get degrees and improve their education. Sometimes childcare is a stopping block for them getting that education. So we really loved what Mom's House did for them.
Aside from our grant making and our Girls Advisory Board, one thing that the fund does is research into the community. So we had released a blueprint report last year in 2016. And one of the major data points that really has struck a chord in the community is the fact that childcare costs are so high. 40% of a single mom's income in Pennsylvania goes to childcare costs. And so to see such young women be able to really make a difference by investing in an organization that is addressing that need directly is really powerful.
What are the advantages and challenges of having an all-girl service working with and then for women and girls in need in Chester County?
And it was nice to just find like-minded girls who have the same aspirations as me, and we're able to discuss, you know, our personal beliefs, you know, and what's happening in our community. So it's just nice to have girls to relate to.
And it's very important when we have a group of students coming together to give out grants that they be able to understand and empathize with the people that we'd be serving. And so the fact that we're all girls, we are going to grow up and we're going to become women and perhaps maybe need these services. So we have to be able to understand that and empathize with that.
From my experience in working with the fund and being the mother of girls, you know, a lot of change can be made by influencing young women and girls. And so being part and seeing this program in action and just unleashing their power and equipping them, I think is extremely powerful. And thinking about all the issues that we are facing, you know, there's hope. There's definitely, it gives hope for future generations by knowing that these girls are equipped and empowered to take on the challenges.
Well, Michelle, Emery, and Bess, it's so wonderful and important, the work you're doing during this holiday season and throughout the year. Thanks for making time for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
Thank you so much for having us.
Michelle Legaspi Sanchez, Executive Director of the Chester County Fund for Women and Girls, and Girls Advisory Board members Emery Chiappa and Bess Nyblom. The new federal tax plan is of great concern to some New Jerseyans expecting to pay more to the IRS next year. Those taxpayers are now rushing to pay their property tax bills early, hoping to avoid higher rates in 2018. And today, it prompted Governor Chris Christie to intervene on their behalf, as WHYY's Joe Hernandez reports.
Jeff Barnett's phone has been blowing up.
I've been getting at least 10 to 15 of these calls or emails a day.
He's a certified public accountant in Marlton in South Jersey, and his clients want to know what they can do to stave off the higher taxes they're expecting to pay when the new federal tax bill kicks in on Monday.
Everybody's kind of looking at what they can do now that they're not going to be able to do next year.
Specifically, they're worried about the new cap on state and local tax deductions. Previously, people could deduct all of their income and property taxes from their federal bill, but now that'll be capped at $10,000. In a state with notoriously high property taxes and some of the richest counties in the U.S., that change will affect a lot of people in New Jersey. Mike Serra is with the state's League of Municipalities.
Mostly it would be those who have higher property taxes, or it could affect someone who has more than one home, such as a shore home. It could also affect commercial property, small businesses.
Now, many of those residents want to prepay their 2018 bills to save a little bit on tax day. Governor Chris Christie is on their side, too. He issued an executive order requiring towns to accept early property tax payments and credit them on their residents' bills next year. The change won't affect everybody. For example, if you pay the alternative minimum tax, there's no need to send in your payments early. And if by this point you are completely confused, not to worry. Marlton CPA Jeff Barnett has one simple piece of advice.
Consult your tax advisor.
From the New Jersey desk, Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
State Impact Pennsylvania's Susan Phillips joins me to assess the year in energy and environment. Susan, first off, help us make sense of the changes at the Environmental Protection Agency this year.
Well, the big change, of course, is Trump's new EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt, who, as Oklahoma's Attorney General, frequently sued the agency to stop EPA's efforts to fight pollution. He's since built a soundproof office, had it swept for listening devices, and spent about $6,000 for biometric locks.
Was that in part intended to lock out input from EPA staffers?
They may think so. As you know, Dave, the EPA is charged with enforcing the country's environmental laws, making sure we all drink clean water and breathe clean air. The agency is full of experts who've worked on these issues for decades. And remember, they aren't political hires. And they've worked under different administrations, both Republican and Democrat. But I've spoken to a number of these folks, and it sounds like Pruitt has definitely created a lot of friction with career staff members who say they're not being consulted. Many have already left, but several people still at the EPA have told me that the loss of that institutional knowledge could be devastating.
What accomplishments can Pruitt point to date?
You know, right away, they tried to dismantle Obama-era rules, but a lot of what they tried to get rid of didn't hold up to court scrutiny, including, for instance, rules aimed at curbing methane emissions from oil and gas wells on public lands.
Let's focus a little bit on methane.
It's a potent greenhouse gas. And when the EPA under Pruitt tried to revoke the Obama rules, the environmentalists charged into court and won. And it could be that the Trump administration under Pruitt will take a different approach now and still get rid of their methane regulations. But there's other examples where the environmentalists are filing lawsuits right and left over everything that the Trump administration tries to roll back. And for the most part, the courts have been siding with the environmental groups. The Clean Power Plan, however, is a different story.
Of course, that plan was President Barack Obama's signature climate initiative.
That's right, to reduce carbon emissions. And remember, this was connected to the Paris Climate Accords. It was Obama's promise to the rest of the world that the U.S. is finally doing something to tackle global warming.
Is that now a broken promise?
Obama's plan is essentially dead. But last week, Pruitt asked for public comments on its replacement. It's unclear what that will look like, but to appease conservatives, it definitely won't be as strict as Obama's plan. That said, they may have learned their lesson from their earlier legal losses because they know that under the Clean Air Act, they do have to do something to target greenhouse gas emissions. Either way, expect the environmentalists to prepare for a legal battle on that as well, assuming that they will believe it's too weak and doesn't meet statutory requirements.
Well, given that the Trump administration apparently misjudged how environmental regulations get carried out and the role of the courts, are fears about what's happening with environmental rules justified?
They could be, because there is something happening on the ground, Dave, that's really concerning to a lot of people who work, say, for instance, here in Region 3 and in the Philadelphia offices. What they're telling me is, away from the headlines and the public scrutiny, the enforcement of these rules is getting harder and harder for these folks to do. You know, new memos that get sent out to them that are not part of the regulatory process that they say are hampering their efforts to hold polluters accountable. These stories are backed up by a piece that was recently in the New York Times that showed a sharp reduction in enforcement actions under Trump compared to previous administrations, both Democrat and Republican.
So let's put Pruitt and the EPA aside for a moment and turn to the Department of Energy. Susan, you spoke to Energy Secretary Rick Perry last month about his plan to subsidize coal and nuclear power.
That's right. And there's a lot of people who don't like this plan. And some say it's a nod to the support the coal industry gave Trump during the election. Of course, the coal industry directly lobbied the Trump administration to get this subsidy proposal put forth. And so what a lot of people say is this is just a way to prop up the money-losing coal and nuclear industry. It's opposed by state utility commissioners. It's opposed by the natural gas industry. It's opposed by the renewable industry and even the power grid operators.
To which Secretary Perry says?
Basically, he says that without coal and nuclear, the electric grid could become unreliable. Now, a lot of people dispute that.
Who would be on the hook for these subsidies?
You and me and every other ratepayer. And Dave, recent studies by the region's power grid operator, PJM, concluded that coal and nuclear retirements wouldn't have an impact on grid reliability.
But what about nuclear?
Nuclear is a weird one because not only are they costly to build, but after the Three Mile Island nuclear accident here in Pennsylvania.
That was when?
March of 1979, when a reactor had a meltdown leading to scares about radiation releases. So remember, after that accident, no one wanted a nuclear plant. In the meantime, they became way too expensive to build. The Three Mile Island operator, Exelon, says it will have to shut down in 2019 unless it gets a state subsidy.
Now, what's the likelihood of that?
Unclear, but it's not just Pennsylvania that's looking for state subsidies. It's New Jersey's three nuclear plants are operated by PSEG, and they're also seeking state subsidies to stay open. And Dave, that actually looks like it may be a possibility. And many argue that keeping nuclear open is not just for a baseload power reason. It's also beneficial for the climate because nuclear does not emit carbon emissions.
Thanks, Susan.
You're welcome.
State Impact Pennsylvania's Susan Phillips on NewsWorks Tonight. A bipartisan group in Congress from the Philadelphia region is pushing back against a GOP-led effort to overhaul the nation's student loan programs. WHYY's Washington correspondent Matt Laszlo reports.
After abandoning plans to end the tax deduction for student loans, Republicans in the House are moving forward with a highly partisan proposal that would revamp the federal government's student loan programs. It's dubbed the PROSPER Act, and it's intended to make student loan programs more simple by consolidating some confusing government loan programs, while also removing some regulations. But the GOP bill also does away with the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program that was set up a decade ago and wipes out college debt for public servants after they put in 10 years on the job. Republican Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick from Bucks County opposes that move by his party.
I think that would be ill-advised. It would send the wrong message. We need to be doing the opposite. We need to encourage kids to go into those professions.
Fitzpatrick not only opposes that provision, he's also pushing a bill to strengthen the program that pays off the debt of public workers, while also closing a loophole that has made some public workers think they were enrolled in the program while they weren't.
Now more than ever, we need people entering the public service professions. We need school teachers, we need social workers, people in the military. We do need to encourage our students to enter those professions, and the only way we can encourage that is give them assistance with their loan repayment. It's really important. I think it's a great investment in our country.
But Fitzpatrick does like some portions of the GOP bill to change the Higher Education Act. He says it's important that the legislation promotes job training and apprenticeship programs.
It's incredibly important. In fact, that's the biggest piece to this puzzle. We have over 6 million unfilled jobs in this country due to, in large part, to the skills gap.
In the past couple weeks, Fitzpatrick visited a sheet metal factory in South Philadelphia. He wants to encourage job training that's a good-paying alternative to college.
These kids are starting at 18, 19 years old. They're engaging in a five-year apprenticeship program. They're making about $70,000 in the apprenticeship program. After they graduate, they're making six figures with no college debt at all. And the worst situation we can put our kids in is have them graduate with mountains of debt and bleak job opportunities. That's a terrible way for them to start their life.
The proposal Fitzpatrick is floating is also supported by Philadelphia Democratic Congressman Brendan Boyle, who's still paying off his student loans.
One of the members of Congress who is still paying off his own student loans and will be for another approximately 15 years, we have the highest amount of student loan debt in the history of our country. It now dwarfs all other sort of personal debt.
Boyle doesn't like other provisions in the new GOP bill, like how it helps out for-profit colleges that have been accused of saddling students with tens of thousands of dollars in debt without training them for real jobs. He also says it makes no sense to take away the incentive for bright students to enter public service.
The focus should be on how do we reduce that debt? How do we make college more affordable? Instead, Republican leadership has actually come up with a bill that would take a bad situation and make it worse. I don't think anyone believes that those who are in public service, whether they're teachers or firefighters or whatever capacity they may be serving, I don't think anyone thinks that they're being paid too much.
The GOP bill also eliminates the federal program that offers grants to undergraduate and graduate students who agree to teach in areas of national need, such as science and math. Boyle says it's a lose-lose for the state, where great math and science teachers are needed, but debt-burdened graduates are forced to seek out other lucrative jobs.
Specifically in Pennsylvania, we have more student loan debt than any other state in the country. So Pennsylvania actually is more at risk to this legislation than any other state. We also happen to have some high-caliber but very expensive colleges and universities. They, too, will suffer as a result of this legislation.
Republican Congressman Ryan Costello represents parts of several counties west of Philadelphia. He's also a sponsor of the effort to protect and beef up the public service loan forgiveness law.
It's important because we need people who go to college, who incur debt, and are still willing to go into the types of careers that don't compensate you in the same way that, you know, careers in the private sector do.
Costello says the bipartisan coalition of Pennsylvania lawmakers will be pushing this proposal intensely in the new year.
We're looking into next year for something, I think, on this to happen. And so everything right now is tax, tax, tax.
A number of academic institutions and higher education associations oppose the Republican House bill, so they're looking to a bipartisan effort in the Senate to materialize. It's not clear if the bipartisan bill, supported by lawmakers from the Philadelphia region, will attract enough support to compete with the main bill. For WHYY News, Matt Laszlo in Washington.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at whyy.org/news. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller, NewsWorks Tonight.